You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 128 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted this evening to be joined by Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so very welcome. Thank you so much for, well, accepting my DM and coming on. No, very, very glad to have you and really excited to hear the story of your daughter with Hirschsprungs. Those who've obviously seen a lot with Hirschsprungs will know that it's mainly sort of a male-dominated condition. So I'm always very glad to have female voices as well, because I think that's really, really important to represent as well. But I guess we will start from the very beginning. Over to you.
Very beginning. Buckle up. It's a story. And if I'm doing this, I promise I'm not crying, or maybe I will eventually, but my eyes are watering from, like I said, just being outside today. We had our third baby girl, Ayla, in 2023. She was our surprise baby. I have two girls. So we have a running streak of girls in our family. I'm the oldest of three girls. My middle sister has three girls. And so I had two girls. And so when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, okay, hopefully, you know, let's see if it's the boy, if it's going to be a girl. And so we were hoping that it was a boy, but it's okay. Ayla came, and we were excited. We were just gearing up to have her. And it was kind of bittersweet because our second was born with a heart defect called pulmonary stenosis. And so we went through a really, really tough and scary time with her that I honestly did not know. I did not want more kids. My husband definitely wanted more kids. And so I think he was holding out for the boy. Go figure. So when we finally were pregnant with her, we thought, okay, maybe this is the boy. I had no reservations. I was hoping that, you know, nothing was going to be wrong. I had to go to it's called an MFM, maternal fertile medicine doctor, and had to have weekly sonograms and ultrasounds just to make sure that the baby was okay and she wasn't going to have a heart defect like our other baby. And so we were cleared for that. And so I thought, okay, this is good. This is great. Everything's going to be normal. We went in for delivery. The delivery was beautiful and fast. It was my third baby, my first rodeo. And so when we had her, I breastfed, and so she latched right on, and it was just going great. And we were just so in awe and just in love with her. And then she started spitting up. Honestly, within, I want to say an hour or two of her being born and after eating, she just started spitting up. And I remember the nurses and the doctors telling me that that was normal, that she probably swallowed amniotic fluid. But you know, you have a mother instinct that I just knew, okay, this does not sound normal. I don't think this is normal. And so it just got progressively worse. And then she just refused to eat. And then the bile or spit up that she was spitting up turned green. It was an ugly green color. And so I ended up saving it kind of on a little burp cloth. And I showed the pediatrician when she came in, and when she took one look at it, she was like, oh my goodness, she has to go down to NICU. And I remember just freezing, like, well, what do you mean? What does that mean? What's going on? And so she was like, we're just gonna take her down to NICU. It's just gonna, you know, check her, make sure she doesn't have a blockage. And so when they start seeing things like this, you start freaking out a little bit. You're like, okay, what's happening? What's going on? And so they took her down to NICU. Mind you, I had just given birth 24 hours prior, so I was still very, very sore, and I wanted to see her, and they were like, you got to wait. And so me being the person I am, I was just like, no, I waited till everyone's asleep, the nurses, not the nurses, they're awake, but my husband was asleep, and the nurses, I don't know where they were. I peeked at the door, didn't see anyone, so I walked all the way down to where Ayla was, and I just remember, you know, putting my hands on her and just praying over her and just trying to, you know, really having that one-on-one talk with the Lord. I'm very much a believer in my faith. And so that is what definitely helped to keep me grounded and sane in that moment. And she was in the NICU for like 5 days. They kept doing testing. They kept trying to figure out what was wrong with her. I went to Google. I know they tell you not to go to Google, but I Googled what could be the reason. And it, crazy enough, Hirschsprung's came up. I'd never heard of it. I even pronounced it wrong. I think I thought it was a Hirschsprung's or I don't know. But I remember looking at that word and I remember turning to my husband saying, look, this is all the symptoms that Ayla has. Do you think this is what she has? And he's like, oh my gosh, stay off Google. And so I just said, okay. I took a deep breath. I prayed and I said, I'm going to stay off Google and just let them figure it out. They ended up sending a surgeon from a children's hospital near us to do a biopsy. And then when the doctor came in, that's when she said, she's like, okay, she's positive for Hirschsprung's. And my heart just dropped. And I was like, man, what is this? You know, and I looked at my husband. I was like, see, I told you. But she was transferred to Children's Hospital. So we rode in the ambulance over to Children's Hospital. And when we got there, I remember it was so overwhelming because the nurses and the staff and everybody was just coming in and just asking us questions and telling us all these things that I remember vividly just breaking down crying and telling the doctors and nurses, I don't know what's going on. I just need to take a step back. I just know that she was going to have surgery the next day. You know, they told me she was set for surgery. You know, it was really hard because my 5-day-old was going to have surgery the next day for 6 hours. And that was super scary and just like, what is happening? And there were talks of, hey, we don't know how severe Hirschsprung's is. We don't know. There's different types. There's long segment, short segment. There's total colonic. And so they said, we're going to go in and kind of try to test the ganglion cells and see if we can find any present or if they're missing. And I remember in the middle of surgery, they gave us a call and told us, this is not what we hoped for, but it looks like she is, her whole large and colon is affected, and we're going to have to do an ileostomy, which, you know, I had never heard of the term ileostomy. I just basically, in a nutshell, what I had heard of was colostomy bag, even though the proper term was ostomy, I think it was. So I just remember just crying, being like, what is life going to be like with a bag? And how long will she have this bag? And what does recovery look like? And it was tough. And it was even tougher because a month prior, my sister-in-law had lost her baby. She had a stillborn. And so we were still mourning that. And then this happened. And it was just, it was a lot on me emotionally. Again, if it weren't for the Lord, I would have lost my marbles. But here we are. And we spent almost 2 months at Children's NICU. Just, you know, it was going from we could give her only a certain amount of food and see if she wasn't dumping. And then if she dumped, then we'd have to give her some replacement medicine and fluids. And then they were like, okay, you can breastfeed. No, don't breastfeed. And so one day they were like, okay, breastfeed. And I breastfed her. And they said, you know, don't limit her. And I was, man, I think they underestimated me. I was like a cow. I produced so much milk. So she ate. She went to town. And shortly after, she just dumped and dumped and dumped. And they were like, okay, don't breastfeed. Don't do that. And so it was a lot. It was an emotional roller coaster. Learning how to change the bag and put the bag on for the first time was horrendous. It was very traumatizing for her and for me. And I remember just crying and looking at the nurses and doctor like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, this is a lot. And then we were 2 months in the hospital and we were just desperate to go home that they said, okay, you're going to have to go in on TPN. And so she had that port IV in her chest. And so I brought home a fragile 2-month-old with TPN, with a stoma and ostomy bag, and just, they're like, here you go. So it was scary. It was very scary, to say the least.
Wow. I mean, when you said it was a heck of a story, you weren't kidding.
I left a lot of stuff out.
Yeah, no, we will definitely get to all of that. But the I can't imagine when you're going in, like you said, third baby, going in thinking, okay, I've done this before 2 times. I kind of know what to expect. I know what I'm doing, etc., etc. And then 2 months later, not even 2 months, but a matter of days later, 2 months after leaving the hospital, but a matter of hours and days later.
24 hours later, our world was turned upside down.
No, exactly. The whole world completely changes. And suddenly you've then, and what amazes me about parents in your situation is just how much you have to learn in that time. Suddenly you go from not knowing the word Hirschsprungs to having to be almost an expert in it, to not knowing about stomas, to then having to know how to care for a stoma bag, all of the wipes and accessories and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
How did you find all of that?
You know, so I'm a heavy believer in nothing happens by mistake. And so I was working in medical device sales prior. I'm a real estate agent now, but prior to that, I was working in medical device sales. And I worked with a cardiologist. So when my second had her deal, I was like, oh, I know all about this. And just, I think what prepped me was just, I was in the medical field for so long doing sales. And so I came across a lot. I knew of terminology. I just didn't know of Hirschsprungs and of that terminology. But, and I'm just a really quick learner. And so when the nurses just prepped us on as much as they could, right, on how to change the ostomy bag, how to flush out the IV at the TPN, I think that one was a lot scarier for me just because they scare you and say, hey, you better watch out for infections. You better watch out for this. And there was a moment where her IV just wasn't flushing. And then there was a moment where she had fever. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, your mind automatically goes to, does she have an infection? So I took her in and ended up being that. So there's a kink. They had to go in and refix it. And so there we go. That was that issue. And then she was only on TPN for 6 months, thank God. And so she ended up getting off at 6 months. And then she had the ostomy for a year and a half. And it got better, easier, I would say, in a sense, just because you do it so many times that you start, it's just practice makes perfect. And I think what, again, got me through was that my faith and just I have that mentality of, this is my child, and so I have to do what I have to do. I think a mother's love is we will go to the ends of the world for our child. And so I kind of became obsessive just reading up on all kinds of things, Hirschsprungs, looking at videos. I even looked up, like you said, on TikTok or Instagram, like hashtags of Hirschsprungs and other families and what they did, and joined Facebook groups for Hirschsprungs. And so I just said, okay, this is what we're faced with. I don't know why. I don't know what the purpose is. One day I may know. One day I may never know. But this is what we have to do. And I just better suck it up in a sense and do what I got to do for my little one.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, social media gets a lot of stick for a lot of the bad stuff that's on it. But it is really used correctly. It is incredible tool. You know, I wouldn't be able to do this without social media. I wouldn't be able to reach out to you or to anybody else. So I think, again, used correctly, there's so much really good information. Yeah. Whether it be about Hirschsprungs or other stuff. About Hirschsprungs and other stuff. It's just really, really useful. And I know you mentioned two or three times there, and something that I have brought up in lots of other episodes, that is faith, which I find incredibly important in my life. And is that something that has sort of been with you sort of throughout your life, or is that something you've sort of leaned on? I don't know if that's the right word, since your daughter was born.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, I've always known God. I didn't grow up in a church. I didn't grow up where our families went to church. Actually, my husband did. He grew up going to church every Sunday and just, strengthening his faith. I knew of God. My mom introduced me to God. So there's difference between just different religions, right? And so I am very much a person that's like, it's not about religion, it's about relationship. And so I do consider myself a Christian, but the focus is more so on relationship with Christ and just knowing that he is our Savior and knowing what he did for us and dying on the cross. And so when I was younger, I knew of God. It wasn't until I met my husband and we started going to church and I started just really growing my faith, going to church with him. And then my faith got deeper prior to even having kids, because when my husband and I got married, we struggled to even have kids. We had 3 miscarriages. One of them was ectopic. I was at risk of losing a fallopian tube. And so we went through hell and back. And I strongly believe, again, that was the Lord prepping me for Ayla. And he knew all that I was going to have to go through later on down the line. And so when I was going through those miscarriages, I developed severe anxiety and panic attacks. I developed depression. And so I really had to tap into my faith and tap into to even going to therapy. You know, I think there's a lot of stigma against that as well. And so I used therapy, faith, and to be honest, even medication to get my mental health back healthy. And once I was strong enough, I think absolutely it prepped me for the things that I was going to go through whenever I had my kids. So faith has been something that it's always been with me, but it hasn't developed and grown unless I had gone through these horrible things. So,
yeah, absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, you were right at the start when you said I don't know if there is actually such a thing as a typical Hirschsprung story. I don't think there is one. But this certainly isn't.
No.
But I mean, oh wow, so much has happened and I guess that's the thing. I guess that's the thing with Hirschsprung. So much happens in a short space of time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got hospital visits and you've got surgeries and whatnot. And I guess when the surgery comes along, you said that sort of 6-hour surgery was just the longest 6 hours of your life.
Oh my gosh, yes.
What do you, I mean, I guess there's only so many like coffee shops you can visit and places you could walk. And what did you do to sort of pass the time?
So my in-laws, so sweet, they came and sat with us. They knew that this was going to be a really hard moment for us. And then my parents watched my other 2 kids. community. That was something that definitely helped us and get us through. We could not have done this without our community. I'm just so grateful and thankful that we do have just really involved family, his parents, my parents, our siblings. He has a sister. I have two sisters. And so everyone was just very much hands on deck and just helping us during that time. And so I remember my in-laws coming and sitting with us and talking with us and praying with us and just trying to keep us, distracted as much as we could possibly be. I also remember I'm a real estate agent during that time. Man, you can get kind of ugly with real estate, realtors in real estate, because they just fight you on so many things. But I remember a realtor calling me and just getting really nasty with me about something. And I just literally told her, ma'am, I am in children's hospital right now with my baby who is 5 days old, literally fighting for her life, having surgery right now. I do not have time for this. And I remember her being like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, yeah. So this house situation, I'm like, I don't care right now. What you're talking about is, I don't care. And so, but just again, I think faith, community, and just holding on to that and just knowing that I'm grateful for the people that I did have, because I do know, and I've heard of stories of people that have had to go through this surgery with no family. And so my heart goes out to those families and those moms, and they are just superheroes in every way. But just community and faith is what got me through that horrible 5-hour surgery. And then, you know, I thought, you think once you get over something that hard and traumatic at the beginning, you're like, it's going to be smooth sailing from here. That was not the case at all. That was just like the beginning of just so much that happens with having Hirschsprung's. And it's hard because, too, with Hirschsprung's, like you said, every situation is different, that you want a playbook. You want to know, okay, if I go through this, this is going to happen. If I go through that, that's going to happen. And there were so many unknowns. And what I guess was hard, the hardest part was even the doctors don't know. It's so rare. And I just heard that so many times. It's so rare. Every case is different. And I just had her physician be honest with me and just say, there's still stuff that we're learning about this disease. And I think that crushed me, because I'm like, what do you mean? Like, no, I want you to know everything so that you can help me. And it just wasn't that. So I have conversations with my husband all the time. Even it's so silly to think, but like, I think about my daughter and when she grows up and, you know, when she wants to have children one day, I'm like, are my grandkids going to have this? Or is she going to have problems getting pregnant? Is she going to have problems when she's pregnant? And so you think of all these things and you try not to, but it just, your mind just starts going that you're just like, oh. So then I have to bring myself back to center and just remember, hey, the Lord is here. The Lord's guiding me through a lot. And so just continue holding on to that.
Absolutely. And just going back to the phone call you got from the real estate agent, I don't think I would have been that polite. I'm just saying that for the record. If I'd received that phone call at that time.
Oh, Lindsay, you're so blubbering.
Yeah, I wanted to say some choice words, but I was like, Lord, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to curse this lady out. And then my baby's in surgery. You're like, you just sinned. You just did that. It's so, I was like, I'm going to be nice.
But you're right with Hirschsprung's. And I get messages from people quite often, and they tend to try and talk in absolute fact, which is so difficult with Hirschsprung's. And people say to me, well, if you have it, then your children will have it. Well, not necessarily. Or if they're male or female, then they'll have it. Or not. That's not necessarily. Because I know people who do. I know people who don't. I know, you know, females who've had it, but they've gone on to have children who don't have Hirschsprung's. So, and all different types. So there really isn't, like you say, a playbook for just, if you have this type of Hirschsprung's, then this will happen in the future. They're just, unfortunately, maybe in future there will be. Maybe by the time your daughter is old enough to have children, there might be more research out there. Who knows?
And that's what my husband said. Yeah, that's exactly what he said. So I held on to that too. I'm like, you're right.
So. I mean, there's probably more research going on now, I think, than there ever has been. I mean, certainly over here. I don't know, REACH in America and Canada are doing an awful lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here too. But yeah.
Yeah, no, there seems to be an awful lot. So hopefully in, you know, a decade's time or whatnot, or maybe longer, hopefully winning.
Yeah.
Like said, it hasn't been plain sailing since the surgery and diagnosis. Would you like to expand on that a little bit more?
So she had her stoma. That was another decision. We just didn't know when the right time was to do the pull-through surgery. I was actually holding out on the pull-through as long as possible just because I heard so many horror stories of the pull-through, of the diaper rash. I honestly was so scared. And even her, the nurse practitioner in her office was just like, honestly, if you can hold out, I would hold out. And so we intended to realistically wait until she was old enough to potty train to do the pull through so that it would lessen the load, I guess. That also did not happen. We had to do her pull through at a year and a half, and it was just because everything was going great. She had her stoma, and then she got her first round of EC with her stoma. And I thought you can't get EC with the stoma. I thought that EC was more so whenever you have the pull through. So when that happened, it kind of just blew my mind. Like, I was so confused. I had never heard of that. And so she ended up going under, and they realized she had a stricture near her stoma site. And so they ended up opening it up as much as possible. And then they asked me to begin irrigating through her stoma. And I know that was crazy. We had to, again, I'd never heard of that either. I was like, I had heard of irrigations after you have the pull through and you irrigate through the bottom. And so when they told me I had to start irrigating her through the stoma and put this red rubber catheter in through the stoma and inject the saline and let it flush out, like basically flushing her out, I was like, that sounds really painful and really uncomfortable. And she hated it. I mean, it was hard. And then it got to the point where we were doing that and still the stricture kind of happened again, where she wasn't releasing unless we did the irrigation through the stoma. And again, it was painful. And then there was a time where her stoma got purple and it was like cutting off. And so I kind of freaked out. And that's when they were like, okay, it's the stricture again. And so at that point, they were like, we could go in and fix the stricture again, or you can just go in and just do the pull through. At that point, I looked at my husband and I said, you know what? I think it's time. I think we've done all that we can do now. I think let's go ahead and do the pull through. I did so much research on pull throughs and honestly, who to do the pull through. I love our hospital. I think our hospital is great, but I think it's really, really important, especially any kind of Hirschsprung's kiddo, but especially for us, and Ayla has total colonic. I wanted a colorectal surgeon to do the surgery. I didn't want just a general pediatric surgeon doing it. Yes, the surgeon that she had seen since birth and who did the stoma had done pull throughs, but it wasn't anywhere near as many as I would have liked or felt comfortable with. And I knew there was a lot of things that can go wrong. I knew a mom who had a pull through done at that hospital. I was going to get it done. And I'm putting any blame on anybody, but I think her daughter ended up after surgery, couldn't urinate for like 6 months and had to have a catheter. And so I searched high and low, and the surgeon, his name is Dr. Mark Levitt. He's out of Children's.
I've heard that name several times. Yeah.
Yes, he's like considered the godfather of Hirschsprung's. So a friend of mine who also little one was born with Hirschsprung's. Again, it's crazy how that connection happened, because I went to college with her sister and I had posted about Hirschsprung's, and her sister sends me a message. It's like, hey, my nephew was just born with Hirschsprung's and it's so rare. And so we connected. And again, such a God thing, because it's like, what are the odds? So her and I got really close, and she told me that she was going to take her little boy to go to Dr. Mark Levitt and do the surgery. And so I looked into it. I looked him up. He just had just a plethora of just good reviews and just knowledge. And I was just like, that's it. He's our guy. So we traveled from, we live in Texas. We traveled to Washington, D.C. to do the surgery. And it was hard. Even with the best of the best surgeons, we still had a very, very tough time. She traveling back was horrible. We got on a plane and she was, you know, going so frequently. She had never gone before and just had a complete explosion on the plane. And I changing a baby who just had a pull through surgery on a very tiny little plane bathroom was the worst. I think she was screaming, crying. I think I ended up breaking into tears. One of the flight attendants like knocked on the door and I opened it. I was like, yes, I need help. I need all the help I can get. This is chaotic. And I let them know she just had surgery. She's just pooped everywhere. And I told them, I was like, I'll be honest, it's everywhere. Okay. Like your bathroom is just covered. And they were like, they were so, so nice. Shout out to American Airlines. And so they were so, so nice. She ended up giving me some things to help me clean her up and then just kind of taped off that bathroom. Like nobody can use that bathroom. So, and then we came home and the fear of what I didn't want to do the pull through, the reason why was the nasty diaper rash. We were so on top of this diaper that it didn't matter. She was going 20 times a day and we were putting all kinds of creams, all kinds of powders, everything that you can think of to get her little bottom used to it. And it just, it was pure hell. That went on for like 2 months where we battled this nasty rash. I lost weight because I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. She was crying day in and day out. Wasn't sleeping. And then I had a moment where I was like, what did I do? What did I do? Were we supposed to do this pull through? It was hell, to say the least. And I remember around that time, my husband was having a work trip and I didn't want to go because I was like, I can't leave her like this. And again, my family, they're such a village. They're like, go, you need rest. You're literally having bags in your eyes. You're getting skinny. You're not eating. They said, just go. We'll take care of her. And I just remember going. We didn't even go far. I was like 3 or 4 hours where we live. And my mom, just a saint, love her. She ended up getting her on a eating schedule. And so every 2 or 3 hours, she would give her rice and chicken. And it was like plain rice and chicken so that it would thicken up her stool. And just and then also my mom was like, I put her on a schedule to give her a break, because if you're feeding her constantly, then she's going to constantly go. And that worked. My mom said she got her on this feeding schedule and got her on this like rice and chicken where it helped her stomach. And when I came back, it was like my baby was a different person. And so I was like, thank the Lord that I ended up leaving. And my mom ended up having that discernment and just knowing, hey, let's just try something different. Because I was just so tired that you can't think of, and you can't think, can't function. And so, yeah. So that was great. We went a very long time without her having any EC episodes. And then in December of last year, we were headed to New York for Christmas time. That was like the thing to do. And so we took our kids to New York. We ended up catching the flu. We were all so sick. And you know, with Hirschsprung's kiddos, anytime they get a virus or sick or anything, they're at risk for EC. And so sure enough, she got EC and we were all the way in New York / New Jersey. We're staying with my family in New Jersey and...
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We were faced with, okay, what do we do? I took her to a hospital in Jersey. My goodness. It is very scary and just disheartening to know that there's a lot of doctors that don't know Hirschsprung's. And I took her in there just saying, hey, we're from out of town. She has Hirschsprung's. I think she has EC. I want to make sure she's not getting dehydrated. Can we start her on some, you know, fluids, some flagyls, something. Flagyls, what they give them. I don't know if that's the same name over there, but it's a medication. It's an antibiotic that they kind of give, they've given her to kind of help with the infection of EC. And he looked at me and said, yeah, she has Hirschsprung's. Just give her some Miralax. And so when he said that, I looked at my uncle. When my uncle took me, I said, let's go. We're not staying here. He has no idea. Just so, you can tell he had no clue about Hirschsprung's. This is something he just read. He probably WebMD'd it before he walked in, Googled it, like, okay, yeah, no. And so we get on a plane, we come back home, and on the plane, she ends up projectile vomiting. She kind of got lethargic on me. It was such a scary experience. I remember calling, doing the little button call, asking if there was any medical professionals on the plane. Thank the Lord. There was like three or four. There was a doctor on the plane. He checked her out. He said, she's okay. We had like kind of like a hydrating type drink that you can put in a drink, powder, hydrating powder you can put in a drink. Gave her sips of that. Then when we landed, we ended up going to Children's, and they ended up putting her under, and she had another stricture this time, you know, by the pull through site, and gave her another round of Botox. And that was hard. It was like I felt like we started all over again. But by the grace of God, she is doing well. We're still trying to get her to not have to have that medication, the antibiotics, because right now we're having to cycle it out every first of the month for like 7 days. And they say, you know, kids with Hirschsprung's and especially total colonic, and she just has her small intestines. She's very little of it. They get a lot of bacteria buildup. And so that's kind of where we are now, just trying to figure out this EC recurrent episodes and bacteria buildup. So, I did a long-winded answer to, I don't even know what question.
No, it's all good. Going off on a tangent is all good. Well, not that we did, but it's no, all good. It's enterocolitis is such a it's such an odd one, really. Because again, before doing this, I'd never heard of it because I was very, very fortunate that I seemed to have got everything else, but I didn't get enterocolitis. Very, very fortunate I didn't get that. So I didn't really know anything about it until I started doing this. And then obviously knowing that it can sort of reoccur and all of this stuff. I guess, like you say, having family around is just so, so important. And the chicken and rice diet is something I have heard before. So I guess it's sort of try and be as plain as possible, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, that's sort of to try and settle the bowel, I guess, be sort of the way to put it.
Yeah.
And just another thing as well, is you said when you said traveling sort of 3 or 4 hours to places, I mean, that to me is like, the whole length of our country. So traveling three to 4 hours in America is like nothing. Traveling 3 to 4 hours in the UK is like the whole country.
That's so funny. No. And especially in Texas, like you can stay in Texas and for sure 3 or 4 hours in Texas. I mean, you can travel 8 hours in Texas. Like it's a big state.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can do interstate flights, can't you? Whereas we don't really do inter-country. Yeah, traveling 3 to 4 hours to a place is like, well, then I'll be literally from one end of the country to the other. I forget that we are quite a small nation. And speaking, I guess, on that as well, with like when you say you're going to a different doctor and they don't know about Hirschsprungs, I guess sometimes we can almost be in like a Hirschsprungs bubble where we're so used to it because we deal with it every day that when we come up with a medical professional and they clearly haven't got a clue because they've either, like you say, just Googled it 5 minutes beforehand or they've just gone, oh yeah, just take whatever, Miralax or whatever it might be. I guess it's tricky sometimes because we have it day in, day out to then go to a medical professional and they don't know what it is. I guess that can be quite frustrating.
Ugh, I was so mad. I was so upset. And even my uncle, like he, you know, he was new to this. And so he was just looking at me like, oh, we're just going to walk out. I was like, yep, walking out. He was like, all right, he's like, you're the expert on this. And I was like, sadly enough, you have to be because I've gone through this so many times where it is such a rare disease that there isn't a lot of people that know about it and honestly that know how to treat it. And it just gave me another sense of reassurance that I did the right thing for when I even did her pull through and just going to a colorectal surgeon. I want someone who knows what they're doing and knows that, hey, and has done several cases. And so because of that, it's really frustrating. And so we're actually planning to go to Disney in a few weeks. And I'm already like, okay, I'm not going to a hospital. I'm going to have her antibiotics on hand. I'm going to have everything that I need to irrigate. I pretty much know now, sadly, I've become an EC expert on this. And so I know exactly what to do when she has it. Our nurse practitioner is just wonderful. She has helped us keep us out of the hospital so many times and just treat EC at home before it gets to the point where she gets lethargic, where she starts projectile vomiting, where she's just a different kid. And so we can catch it really early on, immediately start her on antibiotics and irrigating her and then kind of get her back on that diet. It's hard to just, there was a time where I was just feeding her rice and chicken and just plain diet. She's a toddler. So she got over that very quickly. And so I'm just, as a mom, I'm like, no, you need certain things. And now I'm just kind of getting relaxed. I'm like, you're also a child. So I want you to enjoy, to a certain extent, some of the things that you like. She loves chicken nuggets, loves fries. So just trying to get her to eat, but also kind of slow down is kind of a struggle. But again, we know what to do and what to look out for whenever we have trips and things planned. So I'm ready this time. I wasn't ready that time, but I'm ready this time.
Excellent. And speaking on the future, obviously you've got trips planned and et cetera. What do you sort of see for the future and sort of hope and expect, I guess?
You know, only God knows the future, but what my hope and prayer is, and I 1000% believe it, is that, you know, one day this will all be a thing of the past. We won't have to irrigate her anymore. EC won't be a thing. She can eat fairly anything that she wants and that it doesn't affect her, that her small intestine just gets to acting like a large intestine and just it just doesn't affect her. I just don't want it to be where she has limitations on things that she eats. I don't want this to affect her mental health. I don't want her to to feel like I'm born different. And so my prayer and hope is that as she grows older, it's just, this is all going to be a thing of the past. And to be honest, she won't even remember because she's so young. So that's my hope. That's my prayer. And I have faith and I know that it'll happen.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I wish all of you the very, very best with that. That she, you know, grows up, has a very happy, healthy life. Obviously got a lot of support around her, which is fantastic. Thank you ever so much for coming on. And this has been a pleasure. But yes, wishing you all the very, very best for the future.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much. It was an absolute honor and pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for doing what you're doing and bring awareness to Hirschsprungs and do this podcast. That this is amazing. You're over there in the UK while we're here in Texas, and this is amazing that we were able to connect and do this. So I appreciate you as well.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.